So at the Fredrickson home, there's this repeated pattern that I go through. On a normal day, when I walk into the house, I set my Timbuktu bag down, I pick up the small mail key, I walk down the driveway, across the street, and as I'm walking towards the mailbox, I don't know why I still do this. I'm thinking there's this sense of excitement, this sense of like anticipation, like maybe I'll get a really cool letter. You know, not like those bills and not like those just throwaway coupons that you get tons and tons of in Highlands Ranch. Maybe I'll get something meaningful. Well, lately, as I've walked down that driveway in the past 6 months, Irie, my daughter, has wanted to make this little journey with me. So she holds my hands, and she basically likes to tell me a little bit about her day as we walk to the mailbox. And so this particular day strikes me as we got about halfway down the driveway, and she says, "Daddy, did I get a letter?" And I'm like, "I don't know, you know." And so we get to across the street, "Daddy, did I get a letter?" And then once again, this time her arms are like shaking and she's doing that little bounce thing. And she says, "Daddy, did I get a letter?" And I haven't even opened the mailbox, right? So then I open the mailbox and I'm like flipping through it. And like the dad brain's like, I have no idea what to say because odds are she didn't get a letter. And so then she is like jumping now, "Daddy, did I get a letter?" And it was just like one of those like parental fail moments. And I was just like, "No, you didn't get a letter." And so she drops to the ground and just flails. "I didn't get a letter." And I'm like, bad dad, right? Like anything would have counted. So letters still matter. It's interesting in our culture where we have Facebooks and Twitter feeds and IM messages that personal letters still have this sense to them that you had to think over every word that you writ in ink to someone. And I was lucky enough that she has two grandmas that send her letters. And in these letters, grandma talks to her about the animals that she saw in her backyard or the adventures her and grandpa went on, or she sometimes even gets a dollar to go to the dollar store, right? And these letters, when Irie gets them, there's a sense like I look at her face, and it doesn't matter that there's one word on that letter. What matters to my daughter is that her grandma and grandpa are telling her, "You are loved. You are someone of value and meaning. And I took the time to put an ink and paper that you're someone worthwhile." And so that makes me think about the letters of the Bible. We have 22 of them. And it's interesting to put this really personal that you have been given a letter. Out of the 22 letters that come to us in the New Testament, one of them, the letter to the Ephesians, is just particularly striking, especially for us as a community at this moment in time. The letter is incredible because it's written over 2,000 years ago, and this letter comes from the ancient Mediterranean world, right? Yes, better map right there. And in this world, they lived in the Mediterranean Sea, right? And they had these incredible convictions about the Messiah, this one who came, this one who turned the world upside down with love. And so these people in small homes, they all lived in house churches. So you can kind of understand this like this network of house churches. These are 500 square foot homes that would have met and gathered in. And they're just pouring over the scriptures and talking about this Jesus figure who came and taught this different way to live and set into motion these really exciting things. And so as they're sitting there thinking and praying and being in community with one another, kids are running around everywhere and there's no doubt a feast going on in these houses. They're beginning to write these letters. They're beginning to put onto ink and papyrus these letters, and you are the recipients of these letters. These letters were circulated throughout the early church, so it didn't just go to the house church in Ephesians. It went to Corinth and to Asia Minor and to Philippi, and they circuited them in a circuit so that you were looking forward to when the letter from Philippi came, and you were looking forward to when the Corinthian correspondence came your way. You were actually waiting at your ancient mailbox for the letter to arrive. And when you think about it, these Roman roads in the ancient world, that would have been extremely dangerous with bandits on the road that were looking for a cheap way to make money. So to send a letter was risky business. To proclaim in a letter the things that these letters do was risky, not only for the Roman government, but also for the Jewish powers that be. These people risked greatly to tell you that you have been given a letter. And so in the letter to Ephesians, and in all these letters, there's a sense of this new Christian movement, this new fresh wind in our sails, that love replaces hate, that forgiveness replaces grudges, that compassion replaces judgment, and that service replaces greed. This is the great paradigm shift of Jesus. And in this paradigm shift, these early people in these little house churches were like, wow, this could change the world. Love could change the world. And the Roman government, when you met in a small house church and you shared your belongings, they didn't like this. So another showing you another incredible risk it would take to share this message to the world. And so the Ephesians tell us that letters matter. This letter 2,000 years ago was written for you. And what's so significant about these letters is letters have a way of challenging us. Letters have a way of comforting us. Letters have a way of giving us wisdom, of supporting us, of giving us a friendship with our ancient faith relatives that we never thought could be there. Letters have a way of guiding us. Letters give us courage to live in the midst of unforeseeable odds. And letters have a sense of empowering us. Do you remember when you were given a letter from your mom or for your dad or from someone meaningful in your life? Do you remember the power of that letter over you? And so you have been given a letter. And letters are different because when you read an email, it's kind of like flip up the screen, quick, get the information out, send it back. When you read a text message, it's functional, right? I'm in the fellowship hall right now. See you there, right? But when you read a letter with someone who took out their finest pen and wrote on their finest paper and thought about each word that went to you, there's a sense you have to slow down. There's a sense you have to really think about these words. And so for the next year, we're gonna work through the letter to the Ephesian. It's 6 chapters long. It takes 20 minutes to read out loud, but every section has such a depth and a richness to it, you will be amazed. And what I really love about this letter is this letter uses the word love, that's agape in the Greek, 22 times. It uses it as an adjective, a noun, and a verb. So when it's only 6 chapters long, that means that almost every paragraph, every section has something to tell us about this soul-shaping and world-transforming love. And so, as you can see right here, this is what you call the nerd moment in the sermon. So, in chapter 5 is the only adjective. There's 11 nouns sprinkled throughout, as you can see. And then there's 10 verbs. Look to the person to your right and tell them, it's okay, God loves nerds. Look to the person to your left and say, God loves nerds. Let's just embrace the inner nerd and move forward with it, right? So, love in the Ephesians, it's as if your ancient faith relatives are saying to you, hey, we understand what it's like to be human. We understand that there is going to be tough days and there's going to be joyous days and there's going to be everything in between. But listen up, because you can sink or swim in this life. But we want to point you on the way to swim. We want to put you in those waters so that you can really learn what it means to swim well, to live in the currents of love. And so the whole book hinges at one point, the super nerdy observation, the adjective, the noun, and the verb all come together like a great river at chapter 5, 1 through 2. Really cool, right? And so this passage becomes sort of the thesis or the denouement, if you want to get fancy, or the focus point of what this letter has to say to us. And so we start with what this letter wants to get in our minds forever. And so 5:1 says, be imitators of God. The only time in the whole entire New Testament where it asks you to be an imitator of God. And in that Greco-Roman world, they had this sense of imitating. Of course, it was with your household family. You would imitate your dad, or you would imitate your mom, their virtue, their character. When someone was a great gardener or a great chef or a great blacksmith, you would say to them, I want to imitate those virtues. And then you would give your life to learning from that person. We've kind of lost this sense in America of what it means to imitate someone, someone you admire. Imitation happens in art all the time. Great music and great poems, they learn from someone in the past and they push forward into the future what it means. A new art form emerges. It's incredible. So be imitators of God. That's kind of a big deal. And then it says, as beloved children. So the passage makes us think about God as a good, loving parent over our life. God is this good, loving parent who wants to teach us these ways of love, who wants to help us to learn to really swim in the currents of love in this life. And then it goes on, and it says, oh, the beloved. I thought I'd forget the beloved. Once again, the cosmos echoes to us that no matter where you've been, no matter what you've done, no matter who you are the beloved. You are someone who is deeply and dearly loved by God. And of course we screw this up. That's the whole point of being the beloved, that we can make mistakes and still the truth is that we are loved by God. Then the next verse says, live in love. So it basically says to take this whisper in the cosmos and to make it real in your life. The peripateo, that Greek word, means to walk in love, to let your whole existence breathe and live in love, everything about you, so that no one can mistake that love sort of oozes out of your very being towards all people. And then it says this because you're kind of like, wow, these are extremely hard claims, right? It says, just as the Messiah or the Rabbi Jesus loved you and gave himself up for you as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. And so the verse moves from be imitators of God as beloved children, live in love, and of course, you've got the best role model ever to imitate. And it uses this language of sacrifice and offering. And we have, in the last 200 years, we've put some really strange meanings on that in the church. We've put it in a legal framework, what means that we're somehow guilty and wrong and God's somehow on the side of right. But to the earliest Christians, this would seem completely backwards. A sacrifice is more in the sense of, you know those teachers that you meet who give of themselves day in and day out so the students can actually get it? And they don't care about their pay. And they don't care that they get summers off. But you have this sense in their eyes that they are giving themselves because they believe that those precious kids are one day going to change the world. That's the sacrifice of the sense of it in the New Testament. It's like those firefighters that you read about who will run into a burning, flaming building. Okay, burning, flaming building to save lives, knowing that third degree burns, that death is inevitable, but there's a child in that building and that firefighter is going to do anything to get to that child. A sacrifice in the New Testament is like, have you seen a new mom? Have you seen that incredible thing that happens with a new mom, that first 6 to 12 months that it's, I believe it could happen with a male, but it just seems like there's something inherent about it, that this mom, she's literally being sucked dry to love this little baby, literally giving of herself. And it's this sense of like awe and wow and wonder, right? That God made life so that we give ourselves to others. So we're called to walk, live, give our whole being in this love, just as that incredible example of the Messiah who gave himself for us. When we first moved back from California to the Western Slopes, every day I would sort of make a little jog out and I would see the Colorado River by my house. And I was like, I gotta learn to kayak. This is just too cool. It was probably withdrawals from the ocean, I realized that. But I announced to Stacy one day, I'm gonna learn to kayak. And so she said, actually, I announced to Stacy, I'm going to buy a kayak. And Stacy says to me, I think you should just go for a lesson first. So I took her advice and I signed up for this lesson. And I get to this lesson, and man, these kayak instructors, they're like the coolest guys you've ever met, right? Toyota Tacoma truck and awesome sunglasses, and their kayaks are like hip and cool, and you're like, I'm so not hip and cool, but I'm gonna play the role today, you know, for my $100. And so I get there, and you know, he's got all like the equipment lined up, he's got the kayak out there, and he's explaining it, but he's like really nonchalant about it. And I'm kind of like, yo, man, I know you're cool and I'm not, but can you explain to me what's going to be going on? But I definitely didn't want to say that. So we get in the car and we're cruising down I-70, and you see the Glenwood Canyon and you see Colorado River right there, and you see these kayakers just going by, and you have like these, well, I had these like daydreams about like how I was going to go down this river, pump my fist in the air in victory, and declare to the world that I could ride this kayak, right? Then we get to the drop-in spot, and you'll see how funny that statement is right now. And so he sets me up, you know, I got this, all this equipment on, and I'm ready to get into the water. And the last thing he says is like, hey, I just want to tell you this. 90% of what I can teach you is going to, 90% of what you need to learn is going to happen in the water. And I'm like, thanks a lot, man. Now you're in my head, you know, like that's why you were so nonchalant. I get it. So I get into the water, and I'm like, all of a sudden, right? I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And the boat's rocking and rocking. And then I see these splashes coming up. And then it's like, boom, splash. I'm in the water, right? But like, not only in the water, I mean, my face is like in the mud, okay? And he handed me this like little nose thing before. And I was like, I'm not going to put on that nose thing. What do you need a nose plug for? Well, now I know why you need a nose plug. You swallow like a gallon of water, right? And so, and I stand up. I'm like knee deep in water. It's like the most embarrassing moment of my life, right? And I look at him and he's just like, could have told you that was gonna happen, right? And I'm like, man, who is this guy, right? So then for the next hour, he's like, okay, let's do this again. Let me walk you through the skills of what it means to kayak. And so we're working on these skills, and he's teaching me a wet exit, and he's using all this language of how you see the river and look at the rapids. And of course, it's amazing what we do. You start telling yourself, I got this now, you know? And so he's like, okay, are you ready for some rapids? So we start going down this rapid. I mean, the rapid hit, and it was like, boom, bam, I'm right back in the water, right? But this time, at least I'm kind of learning. I kept the nose plug in, and I kind of got the wet exit thing out. And so then he's like, okay, let's practice the skill. So then, you know, we're 2 hours more. By this time, I'm like, this kayak thing's legit, you know? This is really hard. And so I get back in the kayak, and he's like, okay, do you think you're ready to go down the Colorado River? And honestly, this time I'm like, no, not at all. Let's just be really honest. And so he's like, no, I think you're ready. And so we start going down, and you know, we come to this first little rapid, and wiggle, 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 right? It's like off balance again, but I'm like, okay, I'm all right. I survived. Then I swear to you, this rock was like the size of a dinosaur. Now we can't find it, but I swear this was a huge rock. And I'm like, okay, I just need to fix my body and move around this rock. Just clunk right into the rock, right? Boom, I'm back over. And this time, like, it was real rapidy, right? And the kayak just takes off. You know these rental places that tell you, don't ever worry about the equipment. But you're like, man, that's like $2,000 kayak. I don't have $2,000. And if I'm going to lose it, I would have just bought it in the first place. So I am literally at this point just like floating down the Colorado River, feeling the most unglorious, unvictorious person in the history of the world, right? And, you know, there's like rafts by and kayaks, and they're just like, rookie, you know? And you're like, oh, jeez. So finally, two more hours, day lesson, two more hours of working the skills, thinking it through, and we get back on the rapids, and finally I'm able to kind of, I saw where there was an eddy, I saw where there was a current that was going to take me off, and I maneuvered my small little boat, and I made it down the Colorado River, which was awesome. Finally. But when I landed, like right on the shore, like it was like with a moment of last pedal onto the shore, deep breath, you didn't fall out one more time, right? And I looked down the river and I could see the current that was taking me this way. And around the bend, I couldn't see around the bend, right? And I was like, oh man, there is so many more adventures around that bend. There is so much I have to learn about this whole adventure of kayaking. And that's how it is with love. We get into these waters and our knees are shaking and, you know, these people we try to love, it's so hard sometimes. Have you been at a family dinner, if you know what I mean? And you know, you love them, but how, you know, how do you really learn this art form of love that the Christian faith calls us to? And that's what Ephesians is about, calling us to sink or to swim. But actually, it's urging us that every one of us can be swimmers and good swimmers. And every one of us can really learn what it means to go down these currents of love, to be people who really transform the world. My friend and I, we went to this hike. It's called Pitkin Creek Trail, right before you get to Vail. And we're taking this hike, and it's really beautiful. And this is Pitkin Creek right here. And my friend's a photographer, these artsy people. And he's like, wait, this is amazing. And I'm like, uh-huh, let's get on the hike, right? So he takes this picture, and what he did is it's just a slice of the creek. And so on the far right, it's just a slice of that creek. And you can see that if you were in there, it's chaotic, it's hectic. It's like, I don't want to get in that thing. You know, I know what it's like on the Colorado River, and I'm not going to survive in a second in that. And then he let his photographers, you'll know, he let more exposure into his camera. And then the middle photo came out. And you can see it gets more peaceful, almost like welcoming you in. And then the last one, he let even more exposure. And so then he emailed me this like, aha, this is what you're talking about. And living in love, when we really want to get into the boat and learn to swim, it seems chaotic and rocky, but we have the exposure of a letter that guides us. We have the community of faith that helps us, to support us, that no matter how bad it is, our perspective changes with community and with this letter's help. And so, we can learn to swim. We can be fully present to our kids, to listen to them, to dream with them. We can set boundaries with an alcoholic parent or friend. We can have compassion with our coworkers, our neighbors, our spouses. We can commit to a spiritual practice, prayer, Bible study. We can be kind to strangers. We can visit prisoners. We can feed the homeless. We can learn to swim. We can learn when we work through the pains, the regrets, the broken places in our relationships, when we cry out for help when we are hurt or in need, when we stand up against injustice or inequality, when we listen to the pain of a friend, when we write that note, make that phone call, say hello to that neighbor, or text message our grandkids. You have been given a letter. And for the next year, we're going to walk through all this incredible letter has to offer you and encourages you to be awesome swimmers. Amen.